afternoon, everyone. Today is April 15th, and we are in the Senate Committee on Healthcare and Human Services. We will not be hearing Senate Bill 170. And we are moving Senate Bill 132 to Thursday. Okay. With that, I would like to open a public hearing on...
Work session only?
That's right. But should I... I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 325 because we have Mr. Warner here. Sandy, bring us up to date. And Paul, would you come forward?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 325 had a public hearing on March 11th. This was the bill that, or it is the bill, that extends the Rural Health Practitioner Tax Credit to January 1, 2020. It allows eligible taxpayer on or after January 1, 2019, and before January 1, 2020, to claim a tax credit for the years beginning on or after January 1, 2029. You should have either on your computer or hard copy a dash 5 amendments that was brought forward by the Office of Rural Health that tightened up the hours to be for practitioners that are engaged in at least 20 hours per week, averaged over the month during the tax year in the rural practice. And you also should have a dash 7 amendment, which incorporates the dash 5 as well as presents a capitation, salary capitation formula or level.
And Mr. Warner, thank you so much for coming today. You know, this is the Health Committee, and we've been given the task of dealing with rural tax credit, and we've sort of delved in it probably more than we should have, according to some people. But we liked the dash 5 amendments and those concepts, but then we also are talking about a cap, and the only reason we came up with a cap is we started looking at the income levels of I believe this was family income levels, and some were over $600,000. So we thought, let's find a breakdown how many over $250,000 practice. And so that's our main question. How would the dash 7s even be implemented, and can you just sort of give us a 101 on this, please? Thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair, Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Office. First of all, on behalf of the Joint Committee on Tax Credits, we appreciate the work you're doing here. This is exactly how we envisioned this process, is the policy committee's working on this, developing amendments and dealing with some of the policy issues, and then forwarding that on to the Joint Committee. Madam Chair, I have the dash 7 amendments is what we have been asked to look at, and it does contain the language about the 20 hours per week, but it also has a limitation based on a gross income of not greater than $250,000 for an individual return and not greater than $500,000 for a joint return. So it uses the adjusted gross income of the taxpayer as the measure. And of course, when you talk about adjusted gross income, you're talking about all sources of income. It could be some of it from the provider services, payment for those services. It could be from capital gains. It could be from a spouse. It could be from a variety of things. So that would be factored into it for the ability to pay a measure of when you're limited. So if that's where the policy committee wants to go and say that the taxpayers' certain level of income should be the limiting factor, we can phase that out as we do for a number of other aspects of the tax system. For example, the federal tax subtraction, you phase that out at 250,000 joint. It phases out, so by the time you get to 300,000, then you're not allowed to take that subtraction. So you could have a similar design around a tax credit. Something like this would be workable. The one thing I would say about the dash 7 itself is it doesn't do anything to adjust the 10-year eligibility. So it would only apply to new applicants. So if you were to enact the Dash 7s as is, you would have little impact on our revenue estimates for the sunset. It would gradually have that impact over time as you had more new applicants come in, and those new applicants became subject to the limitation. So that's another thing for the committee to think about. You know, there's nothing legally that would prevent you from changing the grandfather clause, but as a matter of tax policy, normally we would encourage you to honor those kinds of state commitments over time. So new applicants over time, you could implement that based on AGI and gradually reduce that revenue impact as new people came in.
So we would have to have another amendment to address that?
If, Madam Chair, if you wanted to have an immediate effect, you would, yes.
Oh, but this would include this over...
This would build in the limit based on new applicants. So
okay.
As people reach their 10-year and we had to reapply, then you would be able to impose that cap on them as new people came into the system.
So what about those clinics? I mean, we don't want to discourage providers from being in the rural areas. We were given a task to look at the policy, and we feel that it is a good policy. Mm-hmm. But if I'm wondering how complicated it gets. You said that this is a total family income. Is that?
Madam Chair, it's the family income. It would be income based on filing status. So. We typically put those into either joint filer or single filer status. If you're head of household, you can file as a joint filer for certain aspects of the tax code, meaning that you're a single parent with dependents, for example. But we would normally treat taxpayers in one of those two categories. Now, another aspect would be to place some type of a limit on this particular income source. That would be another, although I think that would present some administrative issues in terms of how you would, how the Department of Revenue would administer that and actually enforce it.
Well, but when we were coming up with this, we it isn't fair to go to a family income. We wanted it to be strictly based on the provider, but then if they have a clinic, how do you bring out how much their salary is if they submit their if they're part of a clinic? What is that, LLC or what?
Yes, yeah. You would have there can be different ways in which the entities are organized, but you could limit the source of income by some means. But again, my comment would be we would need to have some discussion with the Department of Revenue about enforcement and how they'd be able to do that and their confidence level with doing that. The reason for, I think, for the Dash 7 is that it fits in with a normal reporting status. So you could simply, if somebody turned in your, and hopefully everyone turned in their taxes today, you can look at your bottom line, what your AGI is, and then you'd say, oh, okay, I have to make an adjustment. And then it could be fairly easily applied. Because, as I say, we do this for a number of particularly for subtractions.
Okay. I'm not sure you've helped us. when we started looking at, we don't want to discourage physicians and providers from being in the rural areas. Mm-hmm. But when you start looking at incomes of various providers, mm-hmm. Evidently 30% of them make more than $250,000. Mm-hmm. Is this going to incent them from mm-hmm. leaving?
Well, Madam Chair, if I can,
yes.
I mean, this welcome to the trade-offs in tax policy. I mean, that's just exactly the kind of things that you have to address in tax policy. There's no right answer, of course. This credit was put in place as an incentive to do exactly as you say, to encourage people to go into rural areas. Of course, one of the great debates always is how many people are actually encouraged by this versus who would have done it anyway, and then you know, again, that's very difficult to try to tease that out of tax policy. But the other policy that generates this cap, income cap, is really based on ability to pay. You're saying, well, okay, this person has exceeded ability to pay, therefore we would rather limit the credit once we get to that level. So you're really trying to do two policy goals there, and to some extent they are in contradiction of one another, but that doesn't mean that some combination of that might be the right balance that you want.
Okay. Yes, Senator Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we're on the right path. I'd prefer that we go a little bit further, and that I think that if you're making over $150,000 a year, the question of whether or not you really need this tax credit and whether or not you're actually making your decision based on $5,000, I think is questionable. So I would encourage us to push further to $150,000. Another possible way to go, and I know that we just need at some point just need to close the door on this and move it to the tax credit committee. So, but I definitely would, I think we ought to start having some immediate impact, not phase it in over 10 years. But the other part is that maybe we can increase it for those who are considered frontier providers, and maybe even make it $10,000 for people who meet the definition of frontier providers. Now, I know that's a new concept, and at this point, probably can't get done in this committee, but if what we're really trying to do is incentivize people to provide in areas where there's really, really big hardship in finding providers, that might be another way to go that I certainly would feel comfortable with.
Okay, is there any other discussion? We can't move the bill today. We don't have paperwork for the Dash 7s, but I need to, I know that the chair of the Revenue Committee said she liked the idea of a cap and felt that, you know, whether it would stay in or not would be up to the committee, but she encouraged us to put it in the bill and send it off, and knowing that it may be taken out again. Yeah. Okay. That's no other comments. Okay, thank you so much, Paul. With that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 325 and open a work session on Senate Bill 169. Sandy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 169, you'll recall, required the Oregon Health Authority with Health Exchange Corporation, OEB, and PEB, Public Employees Benefit Board, to identify activities that address diabetes care, and complications. Madam Chair, you have a Dash 4 amendment, which basically scales the bill down, replacing the original measure, requires the Health Authority to report to the 2015 Legislative Assembly on diabetes. It specifies the type of data and information to be collected. It sunsets the date of the 2016 Legislative Assembly, the convening date of the 2016 Legislative Assembly. We do have a fiscal and a revenue impact on the Dash 4, Madam Chair.
Is Nikki here? Nikki, do you want to just comment on the Dash 4s and how we got these?
By the way, I'm an Indian nurse, and that's the best way back to the Republicans.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nikki Terziev here on behalf of Novo Nordisk, working on SB 169. Been in front of you now a few times. So pleased to say that we've had a good conversation with the agency and a couple of the other stakeholders. And I think it's kind of a kumbaya moment. We're all going to move forward together. I would just want to note very briefly that this section, the Dash 4, Section 1, where it replaces the Oregon Health Authority, this does take out PEB and OEB, and realizing that those things will be kind of smashed in together and combined together, we'll maybe look at how we can get a little deeper as this conversation moves forward. But otherwise, we feel like we had a good conversation with the agency, and we'll like to move forward, probably look at talking about some other pieces that are missing out of here that were in the original bill. Gestational diabetes, for instance, would be an important piece that we would want to look at, but not anything that we would need to worry about right now.
Excellent. All right.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 4 Amendment, Senate Bill 169.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 4 Amendments into Senate Bill 169. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 169, as amended by the Dash 4 amendments, to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 169 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Steiner-Hubert.
Excused.
Senator Knope.
Aye.
Senator Shields.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chair Monson.
Aye. Motion carries. I'd like to carry the bill, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 169 and open a work session on Senate Bill 626. Sandy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 626 had a public hearing on March 20th. Originally, it was addressing the renaming of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman's Office. And it did some other items, expanded the duties of the office to address the needs of the residents of care facilities who have mental illness or developmental disabilities, expands the scope of the ombudsman's duties to include adult foster homes. Madam Chair, the Dash 2 amendments basically takes the bill back before the name change. It's maintaining the current long-term care ombudsman's name, specifies long-term care and defines long-term care facility, expands the duties of the office still to the needs of residents of care facilities who have mental illness or developmental disability, modifies the relationship between the health authority, Department of Human Services, and the long-term care office, requires a quarterly report to the long-term care office. Madam Chair, fiscal has issued a statement that says this does have a fiscal impact. However, it will have to go to Ways and Means for further analysis. And there's no revenue impact on the Dash 2 amendments, Madam Chair.
All right.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 626.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 626. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 626 as amended by the Dash 2 amendments to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation and request a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 626 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator
Excused.
Senator Knope.
Aye.
Senator Shields.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chair Monson.
Aye. Motion carries, and it's on its way. I'd like to close the work session on Senate Bill 626 and open a work session on Senate Bill 777.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 777 had a public hearing on March 19th. It modifies the Pharmacy and Therapeutics Committee of the Oregon Health Authority meeting requirements. It has a Dash 3 amendment, which is requiring the PET, Pharmacy and Therapeutics Committee, to divide the agenda into two separate sections, one section being the pharmacy and therapeutic business, the second section being the drug utilization review section. Specifies that the required committee findings shall be by a majority vote, and it deletes the undefined term other reimbursements. We have the Dash 3 amendments, and there's minimal expenditure and no revenue impact, Madam Chair.
All right. Anne Marie, do you want to talk about the Dash 3 amendments? No. Okay, it was work done between the health authority and Pfizer, and there should be no problems with it. I just wanted to get that on the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Anne Marie with Bristol Myers Squibb. And yes, it's that's correct. The Dash 3 reflects an agreement between the parties that you heard testify at the public hearing, and specifically the language with regard to the non-discrimination provisions has been eliminated from the amendment, but the other changes are the ones we had spoken with you about in committee, just cleaning up the original intent of the, as Sandy pointed out, divided agenda and majority vote requirements.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 777.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 3 amendments into Senate Bill 777. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 777 as amended by the Dash 3 amendments to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 777 as amended with the dash threes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll. Excused.
Senator Schill?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Monson?
Aye. Motion carries.
Just
and
get right to the point.
Madam Chair, I need to go testify on another bill.
Yep.
Do you need me
go
right
ahead.
Now?
Go ahead. No.
I'll be in the hearing room.
Do you want to carry? Should I carry?
Sure.
Oh, Senator Cruz is going to carry the bill. That'll close the work session on Senate Bill 777 and open a work session on Senate Bill 724.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 724, we had a public hearing on April 4th, requires the Oregon Health Authority to establish payment methodology to reimburse coordinated care costs and providing innovative non-traditional health services for which there are no established billing codes. It has an emergency clause effective on passage. This is otherwise known as the air conditioning bill. You have a dash two amendment, Madam Chair, that directs the health authority and the CCOs to develop the account method for the non-traditional services by August 1, 2013, directs OHA and DHS to provide the CCO a statement of their costs when transferring those service responsibilities to the CCOs. You have a minimal expenditure impact on the dash two amendment, Madam Chair, and no revenue impact.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 724.
Senator Cruz moves the dash two amendments to the floor with into Senate Bill. Senator Cruz moves the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 724. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 724 as amended by the dash two amendment to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 724 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yeah.
Yes.
Madam Chair, to a large degree, I think this is to give the Oregon Health Authority a little more leverage in dealing with CMS as far as creating more categories in Medicaid to allow this sort of thing to happen, because there are a lot of the restrictions right now are Medicaid restrictions. And supposedly CMS is supposed to be working on these things. They seem to be incredibly slow in getting anywhere. So hopefully this will help spur the conversation at the federal level.
All right. Any other discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hayward?
Excused.
Senator
Knapp?
Aye. Senator Shields?
Excused.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Monson?
Aye. Motion carries, and it's Senator Bates' bill, and we'll let him carry the bill. With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 724.
And go to 724.
Yeah, let's do that.
And then open a work session on Senate Bill 725.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 725 had a public hearing on April 8th. This specifies the terms for contracts entered into between the Oregon Health Authority and the Coordinated Care Organization. It modifies the financial requirements for the Coordinated Care Organizations on July 1, 2019 and July 1, 2024. This has an emergency clause. You have a dash two amendment that specifies when contracts can be amended, and that is no more than once in a 12-month period. Madam Chair, you have a minimal expenditure impact on the dash two and no revenue impact.
Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 725.
Senator Cruz moves the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 725. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 725 as amended by the dash two amendment to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 725 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered, and this is another Bates bill, so Senator Bates will be carrying.
You need to take your vote.
Oh, clerk will call. I just jumped to conclusion. Clerk will call the roll.
A reasonable one.
Senator Hayward.
Excused.
Senator Knope.
Aye.
Senator Shields.
Excused.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Now, I will say, Senator Bates will carry this bill. With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 725 and open a work session on Senate Bill 365.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 365 is the autism bill. It establishes requirements for coverage of autism spectrum disorder by health plans, Public Employee Benefit Board, and the Oregon Educator Benefit Board. Madam Chair, you have the dash three amendments in front of you. I have heard but have not seen that there are some other amendments out there, and I do know that Senator Bates wants to come and speak to the bill, and his staff just went to get him, so we might just take a deep breath.
Okay, we'll be at ease. I'd like to reconvene the Senate Committee on Healthcare and Human Services. We are in work session on Senate Bill 365, and Senator Bates is here to talk to us about the process and about the Dash 3 amendments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members. For the record, Alan Bates, State Senator for District 3, Southern Oregon. For full disclosure, for those who may not know, I'm a primary care physician and at times deal with autistic children. This bill has really been about 8 years in the making. It has failed on numerous occasions to bring the proponents for the treatment of autism with a type of therapy called Applied Behavioral Therapy, ABA, and we are trying to do that today and in the next few days. We started having work groups about a year and a half ago. These have been difficult and at times contentious, but we've made great progress, and I'll give you the progress we've made, knowing that we still have some more work to do, and it's my understanding this committee would like to see that work done before this bill moves to Ways and Means, where we will have a significant discussion about the cost of the bill also. Applied behavioral analysis is a specific way of dealing and helping young autistic children and sometimes older autistic children be much more functional. It is not experimental. It's been understood now for several years that actually affects these children in a very positive way, makes them much more functional both in school and at home. The real issue is how you go about getting it set up on a statewide basis, and in the commercial market, at least, how it gets paid for. So basically what we did in this bill, after a long period of time, we tried to identify those parts of the application of ABA that leads to difficulty. The first area we wanted to deal with is making a proper diagnosis. Autism is a broad spectrum, and we are now thinking of it as a spectrum from those who are minimally affected to those who are heavily affected. So the first thing you have to do if you're going to consider ABA is you have to get a good diagnosis on the child and make sure that ABA is appropriate and that the actual diagnosis is correct. The second thing you have to do is have qualified people to apply ABA, and that is rather difficult also. We only have a few people in the state who are actually certified and licensed for doing this, and that's from a national organization. And if they were to do all the work, quite frankly, it would be too expensive for us to be able to maintain that. So the bill calls out three different levels. One, a supervisory and educational level of an individual doing this. A second level, which is just below that, in which the responsible of that person are similar. And the actual one we're calling a technician who actually does the ABA. ABA commonly takes about 25 hours a week per each child. So it's very intensive and takes a lot of time. But again, the effect is significant and very helpful to that child. So the bill calls out those different levels of care, and the idea there is to get the right care to the right child at the right time, at the same time controlling cost to the point this becomes something that is feasible to be obtained in this state. Other states have done similar things. We're not breaking new ground here. What's different in this bill is we're very careful to lay out how we want to have this occur in a way that works for everybody. There are still issues inside the bill for which we have to work some issues out. Those are concerned primarily about when a difference occurs between a family and a child and the insurer, of how they work out whether it's appropriate for that particular family and child to have this treatment or not, how you go about arbitrating that. That's in the bill now. We're probably going to have to do some work in that area more than anywhere else. The basic precepts of the bill, though, I believe are accepted by both sides, the correct way to go. To complicate things just a bit further, in 2014, we're going to have the Affordable Care Act come into place. And there is a discussion right now whether or not this bill calls out for a new mandate. Some feel that it does, some feel it doesn't. I personally feel it does not actually state it's a mandate, that it is actually a way of approaching ABA, something that has been paid for by other insurers in the state already, so it's not really a true mandate. Others would disagree with that. The problem with that is, under the ACA, if this is considered a mandate legally, then any costs that insurers have above and beyond their present premiums have to be paid for by the state, and the state cannot afford to pay that. It would essentially let the insurers off the hook, so to speak, and they wouldn't be there to pay for it, and the state couldn't pay for it. We wouldn't be able to move the bill forward. We will resolve that in ways and means. I'm asking for a legal opinion on it. You will hear from some people who will tell you that it's already been settled in court and that it is not a new mandate. Others will feel differently about it, and you'll have an opportunity probably to hear both sides of that discussion. So in a broad statement, that is what the bill does. We've made huge progress to get it this far. I am anxious that we not lose the bill over what I consider, frankly, some rather smaller technical things. I've told both sides, and I need to tell both sides the same thing. This is not about insurers. This is not about ABA specialists. This is about the children involved. We have to keep our focus on children. Every time we delay this, children are growing up with autism, untreated, and becoming less and less functional in our society, when in fact we have something here that works for them. So every year we lose, every moment we lose, we are affecting children in a very negative way, and our delay on this over the last 7 or 8 years is really unacceptable. This is the year we should move this forward, and I would ask that everyone keeps their focus not on themselves in this, as so often happens, but on the children involved in this. And if you think of that first, I think the rest of it starts to flow a little better for you. So I'll stop my testimony there and take any questions I could from you, having the thought in my mind that I'm supposed to be talking about suction dredge mining in the next building right now. Okay, so I'm jumping back and forth.
I just wanted to let you know, we did have testimony that stated that because in our essential benefits package from Pacific Source that already covers ABA, that this isn't a new mandate, but we're codifying it right now, in a sense. So just for your information, we're aware of that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't know you heard that. Frankly, I agree with that, but
yeah,
it's a point of contention, yeah.
Excellent. Okay. We will be moving the bill either tomorrow or Thursday. Yeah, tomorrow or Thursday, but for sure you're going to get a bill.
Okay,
I'm not
you.
Sure in what form. That is our problem right here.
Thank you
okay?
very much.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for taking your time. Listen to me. Thank you, committee members.
Okay.
And thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is that it? Okay. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 365, and we are adjourned.